This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The Democratic presidential campaign is down to two major candidates. Last night, John Kerry won again. John Edwards finished a strong second. And after a distant third in Wisconsin, Howard Dean today decided to bow out of the race. Just a couple of months ago, Dean looked like a runaway winner. He energized what he called the Democratic wing of the Democratic Party by criticizing the war, the Bush administration, and the Washington insiders in his own party, who he said supported both. His internet insurgency raised the most money. He led all the opinion polls, but then he won none of the first 17 primaries and caucuses. Even so, he announced today he will not allow the cause and the organization he built to fizzle out.
I will support the nominee of our party. I will do everything I can to beat George W. Bush. I urge you to do the same, but we will not be above in this organization of letting our nominee know that we expect them to adhere to the standards that this organization has set for decency, honesty, integrity, and standing up for ordinary American working people.
Later in the program, we'll explore the roots of the current chaos in Haiti. But now, the Kerry and Edwards campaigns look ahead to Super Tuesday, and we begin to evaluate the effect of the Dean candidacy. How did it change things, and will those changes last? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK, and our email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us here in Studio 3A today are Jennifer Duffy, an analyst with the Cook Political Report. Good to see you.
Thank you.
And Ken Rudin, NPR's own political reporter, author of the Political Junkie column on the NPR website. Good to have you back.
Hi, Neil.
Let's begin with Howard Dean. And it seems to me, Ken Rudin, a lot of candidates, as they bow out of the race, swear that the campaign they've just been in is extraordinary and that there's going to be a lasting impact, not just on the party, but on the national political scene. Is Howard Dean right?
Well, who knows? I mean, of course, you know, 2 months ago we were deciding who Howard Dean's running mate would be and whether it would be Wesley Clark or somebody else, so we don't know what's going to happen. But we can say that according to what we've seen, he has brought more people into this process than any other candidate, especially somebody who came from absolutely nowhere, former governor of Vermont, unknown nationally. He energized his base. He energized the Democratic wing by standing up to President Bush on the war and taxes, took on his own party, and brought a lot of new voters into the process. Unfortunately, all those voters didn't reside in one state, so he did go 0-17. So you could say, well, what kind of a lasting impact is that, losing every contest you get involved in? But he did bring something to this race, and as a movement, this could perhaps be more potent than he was as a candidate.
Last night, Jennifer Duffy, as he conceded defeat in Wisconsin, former Governor Dean told his supporters, "You have written the Democratic Party platform." You know, that the candidates a year ago were talking about supporting the war in Iraq. They're not talking that way anymore. And they went on to a litany of things. Again, has he changed the debate within the Democratic Party?
I think in a lot of ways he set the tone for the debate, and he gave the other candidates running a little cover to challenge Bush, which they all seemed much too timid to do before he started doing it. And I think you have seen John Kerry, certainly in the last 7 days, really take Bush on in a way nobody expected him to a couple of months ago. So I do think he has accomplished that for the party.
And is he going to, I guess this is the wildest speculation at this point, but from now until the party convention in August in Boston, he's going to try to hold on and build this organization that he's created. That's not going to be easy when all the attention is going to be on other candidates and soon on just one candidate.
I don't think it's going to be as hard as it sounds. He starts with a database of 650,000 names of people who still believe in him. It's not a bad place to start. He does want a presence at the convention. He's going to have to get a little creative, but this is a candidate and a campaign who's proven to us over and over again that they can set the bar on creative.
Ken, have you got any idea of what this grassroots movement that he's talking about, what it's going to be, what it's going to do, what its agenda is beyond what the issues he brought out in the campaign are?
Well, obviously the number one agenda is the defeat of President Bush in November, but also what we've seen him do in the this year is that he has like gotten his internet friends and fans to donate money to a congressional candidate. So he said there are a lot of candidates, a lot of public officials who stood up with us, who stood by us. Even when the polls were looking bad, they stuck with us, and we will repay them in November. And perhaps a lot of the congressional candidates, a lot of endorsements he made, they will be supporting them as well financially.
Our telephone number, if you'd like to join the conversation, is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address is totn@npr.org. And we'll begin with Tana, who joins us from Taos, New Mexico.
Hi.
Hi.
I was just calling because I'm a young person. I'm like 20. And I wasn't really political before the Dean campaign. And just wanted to say that being involved and donating to the campaign made me realize that if youth don't get out and vote and become a constituency, we won't really be able to have our concerns addressed.
What was it about his campaign that got you excited enough to donate?
Part of it was just kind of his differentiation from the other candidates, but mostly it was kind of a willingness to speak out, mainly about the Iraq War.
And were you an internet contributor?
I was, yeah.
And did you go to his website and connect with other people there?
Yeah, I did. Posted probably once a week since the beginning of his campaign.
Jennifer Duffy, that in itself is something that's been very different about the Howard Dean campaign.
That's exactly right. I looked on that website just before I came over here today, and Dean had posted a message about his campaign, and he already had 200 responses, most of which were extremely supportive and told him to keep fighting for the cause.
Tana, as you as the campaign goes on, are you going to stay connected with that website, with the Dean organization?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that a lot of the forum boards on there are really discussing issues that are pertinent to youth right now, and so I'm going to continue following those and talk about how, you know, Kerry and Edwards now are addressing those issues.
Thanks very much for the phone call. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Let's go now with Roger, and Roger's with us from San Francisco.
Yes, thank you.
Sure.
We owe such a great debt of gratitude, the Democratic Party does, to Howard Dean. He was absolutely wonderful for the party. I believe he's right on target when it comes to this war. I would like to caution the supporters of Dean not to become discouraged by this. He was a good candidate. I think electability Kerry is probably is superior. But you haven't lost anything. You've gained. Let it go with the energy you've created with Dean and move it over to Kerry. And we can win this next election. And you know, if I personally believe that a Kerry Edwards ticket would be fantastic, and I absolutely believe they would win the election if they go with that ticket. And after, I guess that's all I have to say. And thank you for allowing me to say that.
Okay, Roger. Thanks very much for the call. Again, Jennifer Duffy. You know, a lot of people saying Howard Dean did wonderful things for the party and helped define the issues. But as we both we all know, 0-for-17. How, if he had all this magnetism, all these ideas, all this energy, how did he proceed to lose all those races?
I think that the question came down to his electability. For the first time in a very long time, voters are using electability as the driving factor in their vote. And while they liked him and while they liked what they said, they had questions about whether he had the experience and really the demeanor to be president. Did he appear presidential? And unfortunately, after that night in Iowa, he handed them the answer.
Well, Ken Rudin, he'd already lost the Iowa caucuses before that night in Iowa.
Right. It's not the scream that brought him down. But regarding Roger's question, and it's a very valid question, because you think of Ted Kennedy at the 1980 Democratic Convention, who gave this great speech, maybe the best speech of his life, saying, "The cause will never die." But the question is that the millions of people who supported Ted Kennedy over Jimmy Carter in 1980, did they go home after that convention in 1980, or did they stick with Jimmy Carter? Same with Ronald Reagan in 1976. Ronald Reagan had a cause he believed in. Did those Republican conservatives stay, be transferred over to Gerald Ford in 76, or did they go home? That's the question that the Democrats have to ask, whether what happens to those Dean supporters.
You have to point out that both Senator Kennedy and Governor Reagan took their campaigns all the way to the conventions before they bowed out. Well, Dean's bowing out a long way ahead.
Well, of course, that was a time when the primaries lasted as long as that, but now it's over in February, which is remarkable.
Let's get another caller on the line. Bill's with us from Minneapolis.
Yeah, my question is, I'm wondering what you guys think the role of the press was in building Dean up as a candidate. It seems to me that the press got interested in Dean when they found out here was this guy with this internet campaign raising all this money. And then shortly before the Iowa caucuses, when the other candidates started questioning Dean's electability and his experience, the press took wind of that, made that into a story. And even the night before the caucuses, a lot of the press story was saying, well, Kerry seemed to be pulling ahead and Dean seems to be petering out. And I'm thinking that it's the press that more than anything else that had an influence on Dean's campaign success.
I think what Bill's talking about, we were talking about it on the program yesterday as well, is the so-called invisible primary or the wealth primary. And Jennifer, one of the reasons Howard Dean was meteorically rising in press attention and in the polls was his ability to raise money.
Absolutely. The press really needed a story at that point in the campaign. None of the other candidates were giving them one. The press liked Dean's different approach to fundraising, but I don't think the press makes or breaks a candidate. I think I'll give voters a little bit more credit than that.
And the opinion poll Bill was talking about was the Des Moines Register poll that I think was published the Sunday, 2 days before the Iowa caucuses, and that really showed, or at least confirmed other suggestions that indeed John Kerry was pulling ahead and that John Edwards was doing well in Iowa. Ken?
Well, I think what really happened is that it also showed that voters were angry with the negative tone of the campaign between Howard Dean and Richard Gephardt, and as Dean and Gephardt sunk, Kerry and Edwards rose. But I do think that the press does have a role in this, because we seem to like these candidates and then we get bored of them, we get tired of them. The fact that Howard Dean didn't like us, the fact that he was always in our face, I have a feeling that a lot of the press, a lot of the members of the press were very dismissive of Dean's candidacy for those reasons. He didn't like to play up to us, and those of us in the media who cover politics, we love when they play up to us.
Yeah, even today, Jennifer, he was talking about whether you get this message from the establishment media, and he said it with some scorn, or on the internet to thunderous applause. And that's in some ways, I guess, defined some of his relations with the press corps, at least certainly the people who've been following him.
Oh, absolutely. Last night, his traveling press corps gave him a T-shirt that said the establishment press corps on it.
And, you know, the Democratic Party establishment didn't like care for him too much either, because remember, as Howard Dean rose in the polls, it was not only taking on President Bush, but as we said earlier, taking on the Democrats who voted for the war, Kerry, Gephardt, Lieberman, Edwards, they all voted for the war. A lot of them voted for the tax cuts. And so Dean took on his own party as well. And a lot of the folks in the establishment said, well, wait, we don't want to, it's okay if you bash President Bush, but don't bash our own candidates.
Well, then, and we just have a couple of seconds, Jennifer, but he got the endorsement of the two leading Democratic candidates in the previous presidential race, Al Gore and Bill Bradley.
Well, one of the things that we know is endorsements are nice things to have, but when you look at all the exit polls, voters didn't take them very seriously.
We're talking today about the reshaped Democratic primaries after Howard Dean's announcement today that he is leaving the race. If you'd like to join us, our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. When we come back from a break, we're going to be talking about what goes into the decision to withdraw from the presidential race with a former presidential candidate, Jerry Brown of California. We're also going to be talking about, yes, the guys who did do well last night, John Kerry and John Edwards, where they go from Wisconsin on to Super Tuesday. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. We're talking about the Democratic primaries and the campaign for the presidential nomination with NPR's political editor, Ken Rudin, and with Jennifer Duffy of the Cook Political Report. A little over an hour ago, former frontrunner Howard Dean became a former candidate as well. Dean is just the latest presidential hopeful to end his campaign this primary season.
I have made the judgment that I cannot be elected president of the United States.
I am here today to thank those Iowans who were prepared to stand for me in Monday's caucuses.
Today, my pursuit of the presidency has reached its end.
I have decided tonight to end my quest for the presidency of the United States of America.
So this is the end of the campaign for the presidency, and it's not the end of the cause.
The voices of Senator Bob Graham, Ambassador Carol Moseley Braun, Congressman Dick Gephardt, Senator Joe Lieberman, and retired General Wesley Clark all ending their runs for the White House, and Howard Dean, the latest to add his name to that list. Still in the race, of course, are John Kerry, the senator from Massachusetts, who's the front runner right now, Senator John Edwards of North Carolina, still in the race, of course, Al Sharpton, Reverend Al Sharpton from New York State, and Dennis Kucinich, the congressman from Ohio, though their results have been marginal so far in the campaign. It is a two-man race, everybody believes, at this point in time. Jennifer Duffy, how did John Kerry come out of last night's, five-point victory over John Edwards in Wisconsin?
It was a very solid victory, but it got buried in Edwards' surprisingly strong performance. It does make it a two-man race. You get the sense, listening to the Kerry campaign this morning, that they're not quite convinced of that yet, and they are sitting on their large lead. They're down until the weekend. But Edwards has some momentum behind him.
And this is the expectations game, isn't it, Ken Rudin? Edwards did better than expected yesterday in Wisconsin, and his second-place finish, still a loss. He's still only won one primary, but all of a sudden he's re-energized.
Well, he is, and I think the press corps is, because we're dying for a race. We don't want this to be over so quickly. But if you know, when you go back to famous second-place finishes, if Lyndon Johnson won New Hampshire in 1968, Ed Muskie won it, but you don't remember it because they won by a less amount than expected, than the press anticipated, so they were written off as losers. The point is, John Edwards did do very well, but again, he's lost 16 out of 17 contests.
Weighing the trade-offs between dropping out when all seems lost or trying to weather the full race has to be one of the least pleasant duties for any candidate not lucky enough to get the front-runner spot. One man who faced this decision was Jerry Brown, the former governor of California, ran for the Democratic nomination in 1992. He won six states and finished up at the convention that year with 596 delegates, a distant second to the eventual nominee, Bill Clinton. He's now mayor of Oakland, California, and Jerry Brown joins us today en route to San Francisco, and welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hey, good morning.
The issue of how long to stay in has always got to be an issue. When you faced the decision, what were you trying to weigh?
Well, it was a little easier for me because I was making the point about political corruption, about the loss of jobs under the prospect of the NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement. So there were some, basic ideas that I was pushing, and I was limited myself to $100, and therefore I had no problem with any kind of fundraising, and there was nobody else around. So all the rest of them dropped out. I was making a point, and I stayed into the end. What I didn't realize, of course, is when I got to the convention, he was all wired by the media consultants to Clinton. So what had been true in former conventions, namely a great debate on issues, pretty much was censored and subjected to the campaign strategy for the November election.
Even before you got to the convention, though, were Democratic Party bigwigs giving you a call and say, hey, Jerry, enough is enough, let's unify?
No, actually, I think because I was running in a more progressive way than Clinton, and you can call it to the left or liberal, whatever you want. They liked it because it made Clinton look like a centrist. So in one way, unconsciously, I was providing cover for Clinton and allowed him to offset the usual Republican diatribe that the Democrat is too liberal.
Well, a lot of people say that Howard Dean performed that same function this time around. Do you see the analogy?
Well, I see some analogy. I also ran in 1980. Didn't do very well. I was leading Carter at one point, but then Kennedy came in and it was over, but I didn't quite pick up on that fast enough. And I went on from a pretty poor showing in New Hampshire to run in Wisconsin. And, you know, with the same, you know, hopeless possibility. And my advisors then told me, get the hell out of the race. And I was headstrong and said, no, I'm going to make a final stand in Wisconsin, exactly like Dean.
Mm-hmm.
And now, 20 years later, I can say, that's a dumb move. when it's really over, you got to say, hey, it's over.
And is the candidate often the last one to know?
Well, in that case, you know, yeah, you get pretty excited about your trajectory. And even though you're falling, you kind of take it with disbelief.
Given Howard Dean's announcement today, I don't know if you had a chance to hear his speech about, an hour and a half ago, I guess. What advice might you have for him? Like you, he has issues that he wants to take to the convention, keep alive in the race. He wants to hold the other candidates' feet to the fire throughout.
I don't think that's going to work.
Why not?
I don't think his issues are clear enough. My issue is basically the entire political system had been totally corrupted by an unholy alliance of campaign consultants, lobbyists, and the media. So that was a pretty searing indictment that I think was worth making. Now, Dean is against the war in Iraq, fine, but so is Kucinich. And I think the big issue for Democrats is the whole economic justice and protecting American jobs and our whole of life against the excesses of the Republicans, the overextension of American power while hollowing out our manufacturing base at home. So I think those are the key issues, and I don't know that Mr. Dean can carry those any better than Edwards or Kerry.
Thanks very much. We appreciate your time today, and drive safely.
Thank you.
Mayor Jerry Brown of Oakland, California, ran for the Democratic presidential nomination. He didn't mention it, but also in 1976, as well as 80 and 92. He was with us today on his way to San Francisco. And Jennifer Duffy, as he basically said, Howard Dean is not far enough to the left to make his issues clear to the Democratic Party and to the convention.
Well, I think in some respects, you know, the mayor has his own feelings about some of these issues, but I do think that for a certain generation, Dean can still be a voice. It isn't going to be easy. I don't deny that.
Email question 10, Ken, from Trent Richardson. What Super Tuesday states, as we look ahead to the rest of the campaign now, what Super Tuesday states allow voting by independents and Republicans, and does Don Edwards' performance among those voter blocks yesterday in Wisconsin, is talking about, present a major problem for Senator Kerry and possibly down the road, President Bush?
That's a great question, and that's exactly what the Edwards campaign is thinking right now, because you have 10 states at stake on March 2nd, 1,151 delegates up for grabs, but not every state. For example, in New York, independents cannot vote in New York primaries, and Republicans can't vote in Democratic primaries either. What John Edwards benefited from yesterday in Wisconsin was the fact that independents and Republicans, but mostly independents, crossed over, entered the Democratic primary and voted for Edwards. Now, the Kerry campaign will say, well, you know, these are outsiders. If you're limited to just Democrats, you can show that John Kerry is the clear choice of the party. The Edwards argument is that to defeat President Bush in November, you're going to need disaffected Republicans, you're going to need the independents, and John Edwards showed yesterday in Wisconsin that he could do it. Ohio, I think, is a state where independents can vote. Georgia is a state that John Edwards is looking at, but again, he doesn't have the money that Kerry has, he doesn't have the organization, and with 10 states at once, he's going to have to pick and choose, because it's a really tough task. If he survives March 2nd, I'm not convinced if he does, but if he does, the terrain the following week on March 9th is much more attractive. He has Texas, Florida, Mississippi, Louisiana, states like that, which should be much better for Edwards, but he has to survive March 2nd.
Let's get another caller on the line. Bruce joins us from Coral Springs in Florida.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Following the man who dated Linda Ronstadt, I have to love that.
One of the men who dated Linda Ronstadt.
Anyway, I want to echo the comments about Howard Dean, disappointed that the way things turned out, I think, between the press and the DNC. But I also wanted to say that his leaving the race has to be fantastic news, I think, for the Edwards campaign, that I think the Dean supporters find themselves probably more in line with Edwards. I think Dean has said some kind things or more kind things toward Edwards. And if you can somehow translate the Dean support into the Edwards camp, you end up with a candidate who has renewed life maybe and is a much more formidable opponent to carry.
You touting Howard Dean as John Edwards' a vice presidential candidate here?
Well, I don't know if it goes that far, if the match personality wise is there, but I think that as far as their politics and Dean running as the outsider and Edwards being not having the long history in Washington that being maybe more of a visionary. Someone who inspires vision in his supporters, Edwards is kind of the natural choice for the Dean supporter.
Okay, Bruce, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you so much.
And Jennifer, certainly Bruce's point about Edwards benefiting from Dean's departure, that seems to be valid.
Yeah, absolutely. And he is entirely correct in saying that there does not seem to be a lot of enthusiasm in the Dean camp for Kerry. Dean said he would not endorse, but that does not mean that this grassroots organization might not take it upon themselves to get behind Edwards a little bit. People don't want this race to end. They believe it's too early. They want to keep it going.
Over what issues? Is it issues or is it personalities, do you think?
I think it's a little bit of both. Edwards has a more populist message than Kerry. This is what appeals to the Dean supporter. He is, in fact, better on the stump than Kerry overall. The issue of trade is key to Edwards' campaign. The loss of jobs, he can speak to it as somebody from North Carolina who's watched it happen. That's some dangerous terrain for Kerry, who has cast some votes on issues like NAFTA and trade relations with China that are going to prove a little bit dicier for him.
And Ken Rudin, as you look at the exit polling from yesterday in Wisconsin, those trade issues, the North American Free Trade Agreement, certainly did play a role.
Absolutely. The fact that even though John Kerry has criticized the NAFTA, he voted for it, and John Edwards does mention that at every turn. John Edwards does have the advantage now, what he's always wanted. He's wanted the one-on-one race. You know, he said that he would have done better had Wesley Clark gotten out early, had Howard Dean gotten out earlier. The question is, there's a debate coming up on February 26th. If Kucinich and Sharpton are part of it, Edwards doesn't have that one-on-one opportunity he desperately wants. I know there's a lot of pressure to get Sharpton and Kucinich out of the debate.
Well, I'm asking this because I don't know the answer to this question. Governor Dean said, I'm no longer an active candidate. Does that mean he still might want to claim a place on the debate stage?
It's my understanding that he will not be part of the February 26th debate.
We're speaking with NPR's political editor, Ken Rudin, whose Political Junkie column can be viewed on www.npr.org, and with Jennifer Duffy, an analyst with the Cook Political Report. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller on the line. Stacy's with us from Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
I have a question. I'm a college professor at Louisiana State University, and what I've seen the Dean campaign do is really enfranchise young voters in ways that they didn't feel enfranchised before. And I'm concerned that neither of the remaining front-running candidates can really maintain that sense of enfranchisement for young people, and I wanted to get the comments of the speakers on that.
What do you think, Jennifer Duffy?
I think that is true. I think it will be one of the goals of whatever advocacy organization Dean forms. But I have to say, I was both a little surprised and taken aback when I looked at the exit polls and still saw that demographic voting in fairly low numbers.
And how did the demographic of young voters break down in Wisconsin, Ken Rudin?
Well, they broke out pretty evenly between Kerry and Edwards, which is a surprise, considering the fact that if you look at almost every primary up to now, Kerry had a clear lead in all those demographics.
And I guess in his speeches last night and again today, Governor Dean kept talking about, this kind of energy for young people hasn't been around since before. When my hair wasn't gray, which was a long time ago, it seemed to be beckoning back to the Clean for Gene McCarthy campaign in '68. did that energy of young people last in the Democratic Party in that year, Kennedy?
No, it did. See, that's exactly it. First of all, in 1968, after the tragedies with Bobby Kennedy and the riots at the Chicago Convention, a lot of young people stayed home in 68. Of course, and when they lowered the voting age in 72, to 18, young people did not vote then anyway. So we always talk about how, you know, we can get all these young people out to vote. The plain fact is, and Jennifer's right, they don't vote.
Stacey, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Let's go see if we get one more caller in. Cy joins us from Vestal, New York.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I think that as I listen to your comments today and to the people who've called in who've had some excellent ideas, I think an awful lot of emphasis has been put on Dean and the young voters, and I would like to put it really on disillusioned voters who, as perhaps my kids would tell me, are guys who are 50 and bald. And I think that older voters who not only tend to vote more, but also follow politics very carefully and have an investment, are often disenchanted. I'm a conservative Republican. I'm not a Deniac. I'm not a liberal Democrat. But I'm very concerned with what I'm seeing in the current administration. And I think that whoever the Democratic nominee is needs to really reach out to those disillusioned voters.
Do you feel, in some respects, as if the Bush campaign, and the Bush campaign really has yet to get started, and we should point that out, but as if they're taking you for granted?
Well, I don't know that it's so much about their campaign as it is about their track record. I think that there are many people of my age who saw the Kennedy years and social programs and realized the benefit of that and were willing to make sacrifices to help do that. And now they're seeing, you know, such an embarrassment of tax cuts going to the rich. And I think it's troubling to people who have the sense of ethics, who were the young people of the 60s.
Jennifer, what do you think? Is there an opening for a Democratic candidate to garner disillusioned Republicans?
I think absolutely. And I think that for a Democratic candidate to pass on that or to put more of the emphasis on the youth culture would be a serious strategic mistake, because I think these are people...
Let's get a response from Jennifer Duffy, if we could.
Sure.
I think that there is an opening. We know that this is still an evenly divided nation. The slice of the electorate that will decide this race is very, very small. If the Democratic nominee can capture the imagination of those people, it's entirely possible, but yet to be proven, and we may not even see any signs of it until September.
Cy, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it. And I'd like to thank both of our guests for joining us today. Jennifer Duffy, who you just heard, is an analyst with the Cook Political Report. Ken Rudin, 50-ish, but a full head of hair, I think, Ken.
My back hair is even worse.
Ken Rudin is NPR's political editor and writes the Political Junkie column on NPR.org. You'll be delighted to know that pictures of no part of his anatomy are available there. He's also conveniently enough with us here in Studio 3A. Thanks very much for coming in, Jennifer, as well. When we come back from the break, we'll try to untangle the complicated causes of the violence in Haiti. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.